Hi there, and welcome back to Hugo's There 2.0, and this is just a regular old episode, much like we would have gotten in the before times before I finished the list. The list has expanded, if you're not aware of this. Look in the show notes. You can find the new Mondo list of award winners that covers a lot of different categories, including the nominees for the Hugo Award for Best Novel, which is what we're going to be talking about today. One of those, Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir, which was a finalist for the Hugo in, I can't remember the year. You got my back, Peter?
It was published in 2021, so either 2021 or 2022.
Yeah, 2022 then. And my guest is Peter Kusky. Hi, Peter.
Hello, how's it going?
Good, thanks for joining me. Oh, actually, I was going to say, how are you doing, question?
Oh, yes, very good answer.
And Peter has joined Take Me to Your Reader before a couple of times, right?
Yeah, World War Z and then Knock at the Cabin.
Yeah, yeah. So, and Peter is Colin's son, my co-host from Take Me to Your Reader. But yeah. Peter, you know, talk a little about yourself, about your history as a science fiction fan.
Like Seth said, Colin is my dad, co-host a couple other podcasts. So off that, grew up on the classic Star Wars. I really didn't get super into science fiction until I was a little older. I'd say around middle school or high school probably is where I started like actually trying to understand science fiction as a genre. I think the first book that actually kind of went, wow, this is super cool, was probably Ender's Game. Mm. And I think I read it actually after I saw the movie.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Side note off that, I actually do like that movie, and I think that it is a little bit underrated.
Okay, all right.
Could have been better, obviously, but
we've been threatening to cover it for a long time. We were going to have to at some point. We were going to hand the reins. Yeah, we're going to hand the reins over to the boys and have you and Ethan and Tim do it.
But
I'm not sure I can get Ethan to reread the book. Maybe if we might be doing a road trip this summer, so maybe I'll get the audiobook. We already have the audiobook, and yes. maybe I'll give him a review of it that time.
But I think the book that kind of made me kind of figure out what I loved about science fiction was The Martian, also written by Andy Weir.
Yeah, yeah.
I love the close sci-fi aspect of it. From there, I went to...
Close sci-fi, you mean like near future, 15 like, minutes in the future kind of thing?
Yes, not like time-wise, but also like technology-wise, where it doesn't like... it doesn't feel like that far of a step.
Okay.
Versus sure. Ender's Game or... whatever, insert like a bunch of other books.
Right, right.
There's another book I read recently. World War Z is a good one that I love. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another book I read recently in the last year or two that I kind of along that same kind of vein of like that feels more near-ish sci-fi is Lock-In by John Scalzi, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. But even that has something that's further future than like The Martian, right? Where like you can be like, there's not major leaps in technology that we need to necessarily start sending people to Mars. It's just,
yeah.
You have to have the funding and the will to do it.
Yes.
And Project Hail Mary, it has a couple of advances.
Oh, absolutely.
So are you more of a hard science fiction fan?
I would tend to say so. I feel like I can engage with it a little more than I would with something that's super far off. I had to read Dune. I enjoyed Dune, but it was one of the more of those read it so I could say I've read it kind of books, or like I feel like it's something that everyone should experience. So I read it for experience versus like, wow, this is super cool kind of reading. But yeah, that's kind of experience. And then dad kind of just threw Project Hail Mary at me and says, hey, you might like this one too. It's by Andy Weir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of my introduction to where I'm at now.
Nice. And you, so for reference, you know, Colin and I have college age or further kids, and yes. you are graduated from college and you work in GIS.
I work as a survey technician for a company down in Tigard.
And this is one of my rare episodes where I'm recording with somebody in person.
Yes.
Like, it's happened, I don't know, 7 or 8 times, it seems like.
If you hear this, this is me petting the dog.
Yes.
Hello, Beanie.
Yeah. Bean is being a good companion, as long as he doesn't start trying to lick one of his paws down to a nub.
All right.
All right, cool. So this book, when I sent you the list, you pretty quickly glommed onto this one.
Oh, absolutely. This one and then Devolution by Max Brooks are like the two I really enjoy.
Right. I don't think Devolution was on the list, though, was it?
I can't remember. You were
hoping it was on the list.
I think that was one of those, like, your podcast, your rules kind of thing, editions. Yeah, yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But I love this book. I was talking with a coworker about this a couple weeks ago because I started rereading it and then I reread it again. And I kind of described it as the Martian. If you wish The Martian was a little more like Interstellar.
Yeah, yeah.
Is kind of like the... 10-second, one sentence, like elevator pitch for this book.
Oh, nice. See, you're predicting my moves here.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I feel like we've covered why this book. It's just a book that your dad, you know, gave to you, and you're like, yep, that was awesome.
Yes.
So cool. So how about a little more in depth about, you know, what is this book? What's the premise of the book?
The basic premise of the book is that there is something that's taking the power from the sun, so it doesn't reach Earth. It's diminishing the sun, and of course. that's going to lead to massive ecosystem changes.
Yeah.
Of epic proportions, affecting life as we know it. And essentially the premise is a guy wakes up in a spaceship with no memory about how he got here.
Right.
And throughout the course of the book, you uncover his backstory and why he's there and where he's going and what he's trying to do.
Right. Staying somewhat spoiler light, I don't think it's too much to reveal that it's a first contact story as well.
Yes, I would. Yeah. Because I think it was actually like, this is kind of like one of like my weird gripes about books. Like, I miss when books would put like an excerpt of the book on the back instead of like just reviews from like people reading it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think for this one, it was mentioned, it was that first scene in the hallway or whatever about him making first contact.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes.
So it's spoiler light.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm trying to think when I read it, if I knew that there were aliens involved. And I think I did. And I didn't feel like it hampered my enjoyment of it.
I feel like they, at least when I was trying to do some research on the book, I feel like it wasn't super hidden. Like, they didn't get into like the specifics of how, why, how often, that kind of thing. It was kind of like, oh, it's a first contact story.
Yeah. So in the past, you know, in the Hugo's There 1.0 days and in some of the 2.0 ones, mm-hmm. we've done like comps to the book at the beginning. And I think I'd like to start moving that to the end just so we get more right into the book discussion.
Yeah.
Because I don't like to bury the lead. and so we'll stay somewhat spoiler light, you know, touching on the stuff that we talked about in the premise and the sort of non-spoiler synopsis of it. And then we'll go over into spoilers in a few minutes.
Yeah.
And so we can talk about anything you want to talk about. You set the agenda. I have some notes, but I'm happy to key off of you.
I've read this book, I think, at least once a year since it's come out. I read it, I think, at least once, maybe twice on a 40-hour round trip bus trip last 40-hour round bus trip. Is that the right way to phrase it? I was on a bus for 20 hours to and from Las Vegas, and I might have read it twice then.
Nice.
this is probably the best way to put it.
Yeah. Was that the bus that broke down?
That was the year before that. This was the buses. It was a whole thing, but this was, there was a 2.5-hour interlude between my book reading where a friend of mine was reading aloud to the bus of 50 college students the Wikipedia entry for the Donner Party. Because we were going through that kind of area, the Sierra Nevada, Stina, Klamath Falls, and like Reno area.
Nice, nice.
But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You have spent a lot of time on buses being in the OSU marching band.
Yes.
That's the Oregon State University, not
the other ones.
Either of the other ones, Ohio or Oklahoma. That's not what OSU is to Pacific Northwesters.
So, that is true.
Yeah.
The first thing that kind of sticks out to me that isn't like a big point is that, like the Martian, he has a particular set of skills that help him cope with his situations, and they aren't instant, like, what's a good way to put it? They're not like instant fixes,
right?
Where it's not like, oh, I immediately know this. It's mm-hmm. I know how to get there from like these four things. I'm not really this first spoilery. In his backstory, the character Ryland Grace was a middle school science teacher.
Yeah.
So he just has like a lot of random science facts.
Right.
He doesn't get into like details beyond that, but it's one of those like, oh,
yeah.
How fast is this? Oh, I just know that because why? Sixth and seventh graders. Come
on. Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the tools in Andy Weir's toolkit here is that he can explain it by virtue of him just being a teacher, and teachers know lots of random stuff.
Yeah, but it's never the exact answer for it. It's something like related. Right. He knows how to jump from there to this other subject.
Right, right. He doesn't know the spin of particular quarks or anything.
Yeah.
You know? Not that kind of minutia.
Exactly. But he knows like, I know that this thing does this, therefore this other thing might be this by virtue of mass or whatever.
I want to make a note real quick because there's the amnesia component I'm not totally sure about. And so I want to talk about that in spoilers.
Okay. But anyways, back to the main point. The thing that kind of sticked out to me first was that this guy's an absolute wizard at Excel.
Yes.
It's just, he has like these immense problems, and the problems usually started by him like mentioning some kind of Excel spreadsheet.
Yes.
So that's one of those just like random things like, wow, this guy's just really good at that.
Yeah. I feel like if the fate of the world depends on computing, you don't go Windows.
No.
So I was like, we could just say it's a Google Sheet
or
LibreOffice Calc or something. You can do a lot of the same stuff.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, because he ends up using that to translate
notes
into chords and, or I guess pitches into notes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And does a lot of different calculations and just kind of spreadsheet stuff. Mm-hmm. A couple other things that kind of randomly stuck out to me was the mentioning of the onboard Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
I don't know why that stuck out to me. It's just one of the, like, that's a weird note, but okay.
Yeah.
I guess it's easier than having Ethernet connections for everything.
Yeah. Yeah. More or less.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he wakes up on this ship and this is a strength of the book that it is told in a series of flashbacks and present day.
Yes.
And like on the audiobook, you don't know that there's a section break. It's just,
he
learns a fact, he remembers a fact, and then it's immediately accessed. And so like, I mean, 2.0 speed, maybe there's more of a break than I thought. in the book, there are more section breaks. I did this one like half on audio, half in print.
Yeah. That is something I kind of mentioned though, because at least in the book, there's a very like clear line, I think, between where like the flashbacks and like the actual story is.
Okay. And so, you know, it's sort of a classic trope, right? The person with amnesia trying to rebuild their memory. It's been done a bazillion times, right? And here, it starts off with him, like, needing to remember his name in order to access the ship, right? And it's starting off with these cognitive functions, you know, what's 2 times 2? Or 2 plus 2? Is that what it was?
Yeah, the first line of the book, and I have it here opening, it's what's 2 plus 2?
Right. And a couple of differences, actually. If you've read The Martian, and then you go over to read this, you will notice that the main character is far less profane in terms of his language use.
I wonder if that's a response he got from The Martian.
I wonder if it is. And also, it's a middle school teacher, right?
Yes.
So he's in the habit of not going super blue.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mark Watney is very much not.
Yeah.
But even going back to like the rebuilding the memory, I don't think we learn his actual name till chapter 2 or 3. It's not like immediately remembers. And he goes through this, I fall 10 feet, therefore I must be American or Canadian, because if I wasn't, I'd think in metric, and I know that because Canadians use feet for short distances.
Mm.
And then it goes through and goes, how far is it from New York to LA? Oh, it's 2,600 something miles. Oh, right. I have to be American then, because they would use kilometers.
Yeah, I mean, there's, even in England, there's folks who will, they'll know both feet and or miles and kilometers.
But it's one of those, like, process of elimination. Like, his first guess is, like, John or something, like John Smith.
Right.
The most, like, common American white friend name ever.
Yeah, yeah. I did, like, you know, he wakes up and he notices, like, all the tech that he's connected to and all the tubes. And he's, like, he's got a bunch of tubes in him, including his, quote, gentleman's equipment, which I thought was nice and made me chuckle.
Yes.
And that's, you know, it's a different way than Mark Watney would have put it, probably.
Oh, absolutely.
As a man of my age, the age of I've had at least one colonoscopy, I know lots of people, like, you know, have sedation in some other part of their life. I just never have prior to that. And so like, I can really relate to him coming out of it and being groggy. Like, I've been told that you don't react super well to sedation.
Yes.
Like, my wife was there to pick me up and they're like, yeah, he's not awake yet. We're trying to get him up, but he's struggling. So next time I'm going to get less of the happy juice, I think. So I did, like, you know, like right away, you kind of see how smart he is with recognizing something's wrong with gravity. That's his first clue that something strange is going on.
Yes.
Because at first he's like, I don't know where I am. I could be
in a hospital
somewhere on Earth, right?
Yeah.
But then he does a few calculations and goes, well, the gravity's wrong.
Yeah.
So,
but it's one of those, like, he only realizes that after he falls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, off a ladder, he goes, wait, this shouldn't have happened. Like, it's never just like falling immediately, gravity's off. It's like, no, something is off. Like, I can't place it, but I know something is off.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you can tell how much Andy Weir loves science, because this science teacher decides, you know, in order to test this, I've got to test
science.
It. And not just once, right? He does like, you know, 30 tests and does the calculations. Yeah. Like, okay, yeah.
Yes.
Gravity is wrong. this is trouble. I think in order to talk about the first contact stuff, we just need to go straight over into spoilers. What do you think?
Yeah. This isn't really a book where you can kind of talk about most of it without going into the full spoilers.
Yeah, so yeah. All right, let's do it.
All right, full spoilers.
Yep. That's one of the quicker transitions over to spoilers.
Nice.
I think it's great. Yeah, and so in the flashbacks, you find out about astrophage, right?
Astrophage.
And that's like, he gets to name it.
Yes.
Right? And it's not a MacGuffin. It's just like, it's the thing that is causing the output of the sun to be diminished, and towards Earth, right? And so they're looking at if the trend continues, then this is really, really bad for life on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so they start looking around and realizing, I can't remember if the trouble is trying to untangle when he realized stuff is difficult because at some point they realize there's astrophage affecting other stars.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure when we learn that.
It's, I'm trying to remember. So basically the whole thing is, I guess going in chronological order is, mm-hmm. he is a science teacher. He meets a friend for dinner that they do every now and then. And the person is a government scientist or whatever, and is freaking out over this power output graph of the sun that's diminishing. And then from there we get to, they're going to launch a probe and go send it out. And so there's a lot of subtle time jumps. I don't think we kind of notice.
Yeah.
In this book.
I mean, the way he learns about astrophages, Strat shows up and says, you're coming with me. Yeah.
And he goes, no, thank you. And she goes, yeah, you're going to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, once he's in there, you know, he's hooked by the science part of it.
Yes.
Not super thrilled about the fact that like, he's the only one that's going in there because they think it might be dangerous.
Yes.
and she comes to him because he had previously written a scientific paper
yeah.
about how life wouldn't have to be, or like liquid water isn't really required for life.
Yes.
And had been kind of laughed out of academia, which sounds unlikely, actually.
Yes and no. It's kind of mentioned later on that like he left because he got backlash. I don't think it was the...
Right.
Laughed out. I think that's more of the him just not wanting to deal with it, which is kind of mentioned in this big confrontation.
Yeah.
But eventually and, from there, we get to probe goes out. There's this line from the sun to Venus. Why is this line happening? They send a probe out. Probe collects some stuff. It's like amoeba type stuff. We're like, wait, what is this stuff? So he studies it. From there, we get to how do we try to stop this? They realize that other stars are being affected. More time jumps. They're trying to figure out how to study it, what they can use it for, how can we stop it, which gets into a point I want to talk later that he has with the insert character name later.
Yeah.
Character name later. but eventually gets to the point.
You want to try that? Yeah.
I can't remember what I said to start.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, anyways. but eventually they decide to build a spaceship to go to other star to, because that star has astrophage, but its sun isn't diminishing output.
Right.
So there must be something there about the astrophage, something about that star or the planet. So basically they're going to build a big ship to go study it. And a bunch of the book is the backstory for stuff on the ship and how it kind of started, which a lot of this is him starting to interact with something, insert flashback for how that thing got there.
Mm-hmm. In many ways, it's very, very convenient, right? That
absolutely
astrophage is causing this problem and also delivering a mechanism for them to get
its demise
to the other star.
Right? Absolutely. Which is, I guess, which makes sense.
I mean, anything that can traverse those kind of distances, you've got to think can go pretty fast. Right. And so that's,
yeah.
And they realize it's got a range on it before it dies.
Yeah. So like I mentioned, it feels like the Martian meets Interstellar. Mm-hmm. The first note is just the fact that it's interstellar travel, I guess.
Yeah. There's not as much crying in Project Hail Mary.
I don't know. I feel like he has some very heated panic attacks.
He does. He does. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But it's not as, I'm not a huge fan of Interstellar. So
okay.
It's not as overwrought as Interstellar is.
Yes. Basically, he ends up on the ship and they're in this other solar system trying to figure out what it is about this solar system that makes the astrophage not diminish the sun's power.
Yeah. So the working theory is there's something in this system.
Yes.
That is a predator to the astrophage.
I don't think they understand it to be like a predator. It's just something.
Yeah. Well, they're seeing that it's at equilibrium.
Yes.
Right? And so something is causing that. And so they have to study it. And this is where, you know, he ends up on the ship. He's got amnesia. He eventually remembers his name. He starts remembering why he's on this mission.
Yes.
And also worth mentioning, his other two co-workers or, co-mission people
are corpses.
Dead. Yeah.
I think what it mentions is that it looks like that. So anyways, you mentioned the hospital equipment and it turns out there are these robotic arms that are taking care of them, flipping them so they don't get bed sores, that kind of thing. And kind of leads into my other small favorite thing. And I wish we saw him interact with it more was the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think instantly when you think like ship AI, you think like HAL.
I always pictured it as GLaDOS from Portal 2. Portal and Portal 2, yeah.
But anyways, like, his first interaction is, like, interact with this ship onboard computer system, and you're like, oh, it's gonna be, like, the answer. I was like, no, it's just, like, an iPhone, which kind of makes... You've seen the Lego Batman movie, right?
Mm-mm.
Okay, first off, you should watch it.
Yeah.
In it, Batman has like an AI program and they just use Siri.
Right.
So it's one of those like, oh, this is a dumb, like, okay, this isn't like
it's an
the
Amazon
AI that's evolving. This is just like, they just took an iPhone, just stuck it up there kind of thing.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the other characters because you have the main character.
Yes.
It's in a lot of ways, it's similar to The Martian because you have the one dude on a mission. He does meet somebody else.
He does.
But then in the flashbacks, you have a few more characters, but not that many. And one of them is Strat, who's this amazing, ball-busting, take-no-crap administrator.
Yes.
And we do know that there's at least a proposed adaptation of this with some cast already sort of earmarked.
The only cast I've seen was the main character.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen anything else, but...
Yeah, I think that's all I've seen as well.
Okay.
So I want to talk about, like, who do you picture for Strat?
Ooh.
Have you thought about it?
A little bit. Not super long. My first thought for the main character was, it has to be Matt Damon. He has to get rescued in space.
That would be amazing.
But then I thought he dies, and then, no, it has to be Sean Bean. But it's a science fiction movie, and Sean Bean doesn't die in science fiction movies.
Sure he does. He died in Equilibrium.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. Never mind. I don't know. For Strat, I think you could go the classic. I don't know. Julianne Moore seems like a good option.
Well, I can see that. Yeah. I mean, I like the idea of the slight accent. And so, like, I picture Christoph Waltz, and I would not object to it being a man.
Yes.
Instead of a woman. But on the other hand, there's few enough roles, good meeting roles for women that I wouldn't necessarily want to do that. And so then, if you want to stick with the symmetry of Christoph Waltz, do Diane Kruger.
Ooh, good one. Yes.
From Inglourious Basterds.
Yes. Good movie. I love that movie.
Yeah. And I also like, have you seen Reacher?
Oh, absolutely.
So the Willa Fitzgerald, who plays Roscoe, like she can play a no take no crap kind of character. She's probably a little young for Strat. I picture Strat more
Roscoe from season one, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking of his counterpart in season two. Oh, I think that would be a better one, a little older, I think.
Oh, she's actually Dutch, so.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. She, a former Miss Universe. I can't remember if she won or if she was a contestant in Miss Universe. Neely, you're talking about, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Casting, I haven't really put much thought into casting. I've been thinking more about how they adapt the plot. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm fine with them getting rid of most of the flashbacks.
Yeah, I think it makes a certain amount of sense to withhold some of the knowledge until specific points, especially given the one character reveal that we get for him.
Yes. But even then, I don't think we need I can't tell if we need the background for half of the... So basically what they do is they figure out that astrophase emit light. And so they've developed this thing called a spin drive where they just get the astrophase to emit light.
Right.
And so that's how they developed this...
Yeah.
Propulsion system.
And it's not that just that they emit light, it's that they store energy as mass and convert it back to energy.
Yes.
And so that's what explains their ability to produce the kind of thrust that they need to get to like 0.93 C or something.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's also super cool.
Yeah.
But anyways, I'm fine with them getting rid of most of the flashbacks. Mm. I'm not sure how to... Because the weird thing about this character is he is one of the first people to actually interact with the astrophage on Earth.
Right.
And so I feel like you need to keep that part of the interaction. Mm-hmm. I feel like most of the interstitial stuff, once they're on Strat's vat, mm-hmm. can go away. I think you can like mention how the spin drive works.
Yeah, you don't necessarily need to know how to work. It runs on hand wavium, you know.
Sure.
And it's totally fine. I think you do have to keep some of that structure to make it. I mean, you don't have to, but yes. I think I would keep at least some of it just to kind of show, if you want to show him waking up, right? It's just sort of a classic nonlinear kind of thing where like, oh, well, how did we get here?
So then there's other questions. Like there's, I guess, two big reveals in this book. One is the beginning of an interaction. And the other one is a character personality point.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure which one is the bigger like reveal in terms of how it affects everything.
The book, in terms of doing character development for Ryland Grace, that's the bigger reveal is his personal history.
Yes.
Right. The bigger plot reveal is Rocky.
Rocky.
Right. And so let's talk about that, about the Iridians, which they come from Eridan something.
Yes.
And so like Eridanites or something. And he's like, well, we'll just say Iridians, even though it sounds too much like Iridium.
Which is the cooler element. So we're going to name it. Like, I'm going to keep it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's lots of that kind of things too.
Oh, absolutely.
Where the book is funny and it's I won't say witty, but like it sounds like the way a middle school teacher would write things.
Oh, absolutely.
And like, I'm just going to shorten it to this because I can, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
It feels very Mark Watney kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it feels very Andy Weir. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, you know, what do you do in first contact where, I mean, you're not expecting hostile aliens, right? You're like, maybe they're here for the same reason I am.
Yes.
You know, if they're here to destroy me, well, I guess I'm dead.
Yes.
But if they're not, then I would need to figure out how to communicate mm-hmm. with them. And those interactions are fun.
Absolutely.
You know, when they're passing back and forth the cylinders and
yes.
trying to say, yeah. Because Rocky's ship has the robotic arm and it throws stuff mm-hmm. to him. And he's like, what is this cylinder even made of? And he like tests it with his laser chromatography or whatever it is. And it's mm-hmm. like, xenon. What?
Yeah.
How? And I have seen people complain about xenonite and like it, where essentially like the Eridian's science is able to polymerize it, turn it into, you know, alloy and all kinds of stuff. This noble gases typically don't interact, but there are some noble gases that do.
Yes.
Compounds can be made with them.
Yeah.
So it's not out of the range of possibility. The thing that I loved about it was he didn't just say, weird, it's not on the periodic table, which is the way art majors say this is something new that we haven't seen before. Because yes. if you know anything about the periodic table, there can't be anything off of it. There can be things that would fit in it
yeah.
that we just haven't discovered yet.
Yeah.
But that's not what people mean when they say it's not on the periodic table.
Yeah.
Because
it's just some,
they're like, it's a metal that's not on the periodic table. I'm like, well, then it's horrifically radioactive. There's nowhere else to fit something in.
Yeah.
So this is what comes of being raised by a chemist. but yeah, I like Andy Weir is smart enough to know, mm-hmm. no, that's not the thing we use. We just say it's a strange thing that we don't understand how they made it.
I think he calls it like metal stew later on or something like that.
Mm. Yeah. And so, yeah, the first contact stuff is fun. Just like developing, figuring out how, you know, what hand gestures might mean, right? Especially yes. when your alien compatriot. It has five arms, is kind of spider-like. Now, you and I both share a phobia of spiders. Mine has receded a bit in later years. Yours is more acute than mine, I believe.
That is fair to say.
But how would you react to looking through that thing and seeing a spider-like alien?
Kill it with fire.
Which would not work.
Absolutely. Which, yeah. Yeah, I it would not be pleasant.
Yeah.
Or very main character heroic kind of a me, and be like, nah.
Yeah. You might be like, you'd be like Chief O'Brien in that one episode with the transporter psychosis when he's talking about, I had to go do a repair in this conduit where there are these spiders with 1/2 meter legs, you know.
The one thing that I'm kind of a little ashamed of it is the, like, I'm definitely more scared of large spiders.
Yeah.
And I honestly had to, like, I forgot how big a Labrador was. And so I had to go Google how big a Labrador was. Yeah. So I'm like, just how big on a human is a Labrador? Like,
about bean size.
Yeah, about bean size.
Maybe slightly larger. 60 yes. pound dog, you know.
I need one big ass fly swatter.
Yeah, exactly. Have you ever seen the videos of someone trying to get a huntsman spider out of their house?
Yes, unfortunately. Yes.
Yeah. No. No, no bueno.
No. But like going back to the Excel spreadsheets, the alien, the erudite, he names Rocky, and he communicates through whale song. And so,
yeah, more or less,
there's this big, he sets up this Excel spreadsheet that figures out the chords in the notes in the whale song, and then tries to figure out a way to like associate that with like an English word.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of language building. Mm-hmm. And he talks about how like, once you have like a good base, it's kind of easy to expand on that from just right. like talking around things. And every now and then we get to a point where it's like, we had a conversation that required adding a few more words.
Right.
Like, what was it? Brain, like, small brain, stupid,
brainless. Yeah.
Brainless.
And then there was one word that Rocky just refused to translate for him.
Yes.
Now, you're a musician, and I'm involved in music enough to know that there's a lot of complications that you would get into trying to translate musical notes to words, because...
Yeah.
You know, a chord of two notes could be quite different than either of those notes, you mm-hmm. know, somewhere else. It could be about the meter of the way things are done, or,
yeah.
You know, other kinds of patterns, or it's just sort of convenient that it happens to be in the human hearing range.
That's actually something I want to talk about later, because they kind of do talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and this is the thing I want to talk about, right?
Yeah.
If you want to criticize this book for like the entire plot being too contrived, I get it, because Ryland Grace is the guy who happened to publish this paper that gets him pulled into the project. He has the correct gene to allow him to survive the hibernation process or the coma process. He has is able to communicate with Rocky because human hearing is in the right range for it.
Yeah.
I was trying to think what I think there's several other things where you're like, well, that's really convenient.
Yes.
But you know, whatever. It's sort of like some of the anthropic principle arguments, right? That, well, yeah, you would expect that since we're here and we have sensory organs, that we would be able to study our world, right? That it would bring forth creatures like us. And if it didn't, then no one would observe it. But since we are here and observing it, all that says is that happened. It doesn't imply any intent to it.
Absolutely. And that's like one of there's never like this big conversation about like evolution.
Right.
Takes kind of a big part in this story, particularly around the third act.
Yes.
It's probably the right way to put it. And there's these small slip into conversation that he has with Rocky about evolution, how are our circumstances similar? And a couple notes, the thing they talk about is like you mentioned the hearing, and note that Rocky says in response to that is, well, a rock falling is the same as a rock falling. And so we should evolve to hear that falling rock. Right,
danger sounds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's just pick an end of a spectrum and go. Mm-hmm.
This was the thing I thought of the other day. I can't remember. I was watching a movie, and this thought came to me that at 28 atmospheres of pressure or something.
Yeah.
Those notes would be quite different, right? The sound would travel very different. It'd be like knocking on a fish tank, right?
Yeah.
In just normal atmosphere, everything would sound quite different. And so I'm not totally sure that the communication works.
Yeah.
But whatever. But then you could just say that, that Ryland is hearing it, through oxygen. Right. And it's low pressure, right.
Yeah.
There because it's a pure oxygen, atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't have to be as high as here where it's mixed with nitrogen as well. And so he's hearing it in his range, translating it for that. Producing it that way, and then as it goes through the medium, it changes it to whatever pitch it would be for Rocky. So I can deal with that. It's
you can science.
I can retcon it. Yeah.
The other one is that I loved is the how like our intelligence has to be like a similar range, because we have to be smart enough to be able to travel around the stars, and there is like a leap that both species make somehow to get from their home place to what's the system they're called?
Tau Ceti.
Thank you, Tau Ceti. But they're smart enough to do that. They are smart enough to understand there's a problem, but they're not smart enough to synthesize a solution on their home world
without traveling there. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's probably more advanced species. They go, oh, we have a problem. Let's just science our way out of this. And then at home. Mm-hmm.
And that's explaining the contingency of it, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's just that it happens we're at similar levels of technology.
Mm-hmm. So it's one of those like, hey, look at us kind of things.
One of the fun things here is that Rocky does not have any visual organ of any kind.
Yes.
And that's a fun character bit, because I like when he asks Ryland, can you hear light? Because he doesn't know what sight is.
Yeah.
And so he would express it in terms of his own sensory abilities. And so I just like that. You're like, can you hear light? Really? Well, not precisely. We have separate organs for that, and pretty handy. And the Rocky says, amaze.
Yes. How was it? Fist my bump.
Yes. No, it's just fist bump.
Yes. And then like, it kind of reminds me of like the ba la 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 from Big Hero 6.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I have seen that. And yeah, the interactions between, I love that when Rocky says to him, why are you stupid? You're not usually stupid. He's like, well, I'm on drugs and I'm sleep deprived because there was that. I can't remember exactly what happened. I think they had some issues with when they did the fishing expedition to get the Taumiba.
Yes.
Rocky had to save Ryland's life, and then Ryland saved Rocky's life. And
yes and no.
Yeah. And so like picking up Rocky burned him, right? And so he's on painkillers.
Yeah.
And that's not ideal.
Mm-hmm. But that happened because the ship was off axis. So basically what happened is they go to this planet that they name, he lets Rocky name, And so he translates Rocky's word for the planet into Adrian.
Yes.
It took me like the second time reading it to catch. I'm like, oh, that's like, anyways.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, what they figured out is that there is a predator, the astrophage has a predator. Mm-hmm. And they need to go collect some of this predator so they can understand how it works. But it exists at a range that is outside what their collector was able to do. So basically, they just science together this 10 kilometer long fishing chain.
Right.
And drop something in the upper atmosphere. And then it talks about how they have to maneuver this ship at a very, like, 285 meters per second.
Yeah, a slow enough speed so that they're going to start losing altitude. But then they have to thrust at a certain angle in order to not burn up the chain that they're dropping down.
Yes.
And that's nice. Like, I appreciate the attention to detail about, okay, the complexity mm-hmm. of this. We have to do it, but is it even possible? Yes, it's possible under these very specific circumstances.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like torching the atmosphere with ultraviolet radiation, not ultraviolet,
infrared.
Yeah. Yeah. Causes some problems because
it reflects back and just like,
yeah. And they're like, oh, it's okay. We've got astrophage all along the hull and it'll absorb the radiation. Well, yeah, but not until it gets through the metal.
Yes.
And they don't really account for that. And so that causes some major problems.
So I feel like from that, we should talk about the differences between, Ryland species, the humans and the Iridites.
Iridians.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Cause the Iridians exist at 28 times the atmosphere that Earth exists.
Something like that. Yeah.
And so
and at like 200 degrees Celsius or, you know, it's even higher, isn't it?
It's something like that. Yeah. With the way they describe Rocky, I started to imagine him more like a crab than a spider.
Yes. Very much.
Just cause
even describing his carapace, right? That's why he called him Rocky. Cause he looked like a rock until he started moving and he realized he had hands.
Yes. And then he realizes, oh, Rocky is actually just an amalgamation of metals.
I like the description too, of some of the gestures, right? The, you know?
Yes. Has three fingers on five hands.
Yeah. The jazz hands.
Yes. Jazz hands.
for yes.
Excite. Right?
Yes.
Talk about the different kind of like time systems.
Oh yeah. I mean, well, like the logical thing, right? That
yeah.
Are we base 10 for the most part because we have 10 digits? Probably.
Yeah.
And so they have
base six,
you know, five limbs and, can't remember. No, they have six fingers basically. Right. And so they're base six. Yeah.
I think
It wasn't about the number of legs. It was about the number of digits.
From the way it was described, I thought Rocky had fingers on all of his legs.
Mm, good point. I mean, I'm pretty sure that it does say six digits.
Yeah.
So they'd be in, you know, hexal notation, I suppose. But
sure.
And it's fun to, like, it's fortunate in a lot of ways, right? That the Iridians don't see the way we do, but then Rocky brings out the clock. And I don't think he's recognized yet that Ryland can see light.
Oh, absolutely not.
And it just happens that the textures that they can read with essentially, it's almost like they have not LIDAR, but
super
but like
echolocation.
Yeah, echolocation, right?
Yeah.
And the textures are visible to humans. And mm-hmm. that's another, you know, convenient thing. And he's like, yeah. Oh, that's a clock, you know? And he kind of calculates, okay, what's that translate into in days and hours and minutes and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Different like societal differences, like the erudites. They eat privately and then they sleep together because
right.
they have two different.
Well, they're very vulnerable during their sleep cycles.
Right? Yes, because they essentially just completely shut down. Mm-hmm. And humans are just we must sleep for was it 8 hours every 16 hours, something like that, or something like whatever the time that Ryland uses is.
Right. Yeah, and you know the relationship that develops between Grace and Rocky is very sweet. Right. It's very heartwarming.
Absolutely.
To the point that. When they eventually do go their separate ways and Grace is talking about how he goes to sleep and he's like, it feels wrong not having someone watching me while I sleep.
Yes.
I'm like, that's just another way of saying you miss your friend. Just say you miss your friend.
Yes.
Men just can't admit it.
Toxic masculinity.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to some extent, I'm like, how long did it take before you could really communicate? And like he starts understanding, right? For the movie to work, for the book to work, right? There has to be translation pretty quick.
So kind of like going off that, it's like, I want to ask you your experience because you read this, you said mentioned most with audiobook and then reading the actual book.
Back when it first came out, I got the audiobook just because I you know, still working through He Goes There 1.0. I didn't have time for any other eye reading. And so I was just like, you know what? It's not that expensive. It just had a credit. And so I was like, yeah, I'll pick that up.
Sure.
And so, yeah, in the book. And so I had never seen it before until this time through because I had bought the book as well.
Yeah.
And so this time I read like the first half of it in print, and then I sped read through some of it on audio, and then finished it up in print. In the book, when Rocky starts speaking, it just shows notes, right? Yeah. I was a little disappointed there was no staff of any kind.
Yeah, that kind of disappointed me, especially because he mentions like this is a C major chord. Like I think he mentions a couple like specific types of chords.
Yeah. So I didn't know to what extent like when he wrote those, did he write down what notes they were?
I don't know.
You know, I would like to see the spreadsheet. I would not be surprised if he has it.
Oh, absolutely not. So like in the audiobook, is it just, I'm going to call it whale song because that's what.
It's more like a cat walking across a keyboard.
Okay.
You know, walking across a piano kind of thing, you know.
All right. So like, do they translate that into English or is it just that and then Ryland's response in English?
It's the same as in the book. If it shows the notes, it plays the notes.
Okay.
And I'm not 100% sure that the person doing that, you know, for the audiobook made sure that matched. Because again, there's no
like,
actual staff to show where, you know, what's the bottom note there?
Yeah.
Because if you have that, then you're good. But, well, the staff is helpful to know if you're going up whole steps or half steps. And,
yeah.
And there were no, what are they called?
Key signatures, whatever.
No, the generic term for flats and sharps.
Augmentation.
No, that's not the one I was thinking of, but.
Anyways, sorry.
Yeah. Accidentals.
Yes. That's what it is.
But yeah, so it just, so the first time he talks, there's just this all of a sudden a chord out of nowhere.
Nice.
And so that was really cool. And I thought that's a great, I wouldn't even call it an adaptation. It's just like a great way of implementing that in audio. How would you do it otherwise?
Because mm-hmm. like from there, like I was, a lot of my thoughts kind of started tracking, especially this last time reading it, how are they going to adapt this into a movie?
Mm-hmm.
And I talked with Dad about this and his thought was, well, how do you talk with R2-D2?
Right.
Which makes sense, but also they don't have the type of conversations that need to happen in the book with R2-D2. It's usually this, hey, we're going to Dagobah. Beep, 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 beep. Yeah, we need to go see an old friend. Like, it's those kind of things.
It's almost more like Chewbacca, really.
Yeah.
Right? Because you can tell it's a language, but it sounds more like noise to us.
Okay, yeah.
And yeah, you don't ever see translations of what Chewbacca says. You don't see translations of what R2 says. You get the context from what other people are saying, or you start actually translating. And they'll have to do it. And in the audiobook, they did a nice job, too, with even when they showed, when they had Rocky speaking.
Yeah.
And Ryland understanding it, it sounded different.
Okay.
You know, like they put a vocal effect on it.
Nice.
And so it was always obvious who was speaking.
Got it.
Which was nice. And it's a good audiobook.
I'll have to check it out. Good
audio performance from Ray Porter.
Nice.
So I was thinking about some of the flashbacks because it introduces these other characters who aren't super important, but Andy Weir does as good a job as he can to make them fun and memorable.
Yes.
And so like, Martin Dubois is this very, like, he reminded me of Leonard's mother from The Big Bang Theory. You know, I need to go urinate, you know,
yes.
where he's talking to her and he's like, yes, I have begun a sexual relationship with, you know, other lady.
Doctor on, or whatever.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Yes. It is quite pleasurable. Like, okay, dude, whatever, Spock, knock it off.
Yes.
There's a couple things too that like, I mean, I'd love to sit down and talk with Andy Weir about the science, you know, and does it make sense that, well, okay, is your understanding that the Iridians, they're aware that they're on a planet in a solar system?
Yes.
I guess. They can't see their sun, but they can detect some sort of influence of it through heat or something. But their atmosphere is very thick, right? They live in essentially total darkness.
Yeah.
So like, I just don't know how they know they're on a planet. that's the thing.
Yeah, those are like the crazy questions because he discovers later, Rocky never learned about radiation or relativity.
Right, and this is what I'm getting to is like, if they can detect stellar radiation in some way, right? They could make detectors for that. It wouldn't have to be in the visual range because they don't have any apparatus for detecting that.
And he eventually, I think they do because Rocky eventually makes one.
They have to, but then how did they not know about radiation? I mean, not knowing about cosmic rays, that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what I mean specifically about the radiation.
Yeah.
They don't understand interstellar radiation.
Yeah, but it sort of says they didn't understand radiation at all. And I'm like, that does not make any sense. But once you've discovered radiation and the EM band, somebody's going to come up with relativity, it would seem like. And so that's because Rocky's confused, right?
Yes.
Why do I have so much fuel left on my ship? Why was the trip shorter than it should have been?
Yeah.
And Ryland's like, all right, sit down. We've got to talk it.
We're going to need some words.
Yeah. And I liked that he said, like, Rocky had a hard time believing it, but, you know, I proved it to him.
Yeah.
because you know, it was his anecdotal experience that, well, when you travel that close to the speed of light, you don't travel as far as when you're not traveling at that speed, mm-hmm. or as subjectively long.
Yeah.
Because you have length contraction and time dilation working for you.
Yes.
I think a lot of people don't know about the length contraction thing, but
yeah.
where the distance is actually shorter, mm-hmm. not just the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, honestly. Mm-hmm.
No, it doesn't.
I mean.
Yeah. I mean, you can, there's some good, actually, if you're an Amazon Prime member, there's a bunch of really good graphic nonfiction about like relativity for the rest of us, or I can't remember what the name of the book was, but it uses a bunch of graphics to kind of demonstrate stuff. And there's like quantum mechanics as well. Yeah. Lots of cool stuff.
My first thought was like, let me know when there's a crash course.
Yeah, exactly. But there probably is.
That would have surprised me, honestly. I need to go double check that.
Hank Green's probably done one for you already.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Honestly, my first thought when casting this was John Green.
As Ryland
like,
Grace?
Just imagine like, who do you think
of? Oh, and then you would have me from the past. That'd be great. So if you haven't seen Crash Course, then you probably don't know about Mr. Green. Oh, me from the past. I hate you.
We'll send an open letter to the cause of radiation.
Yeah. So yeah, they don't know about radiation. And so that's another thing about like, if Rocky's whole crew was alive, they probably figure this stuff out without Grace's help.
Yeah.
But it just happens that Rocky was the engineer. He was back near the engines, which happened to be stuffed with an astrophage to protect him from cosmic rays.
Yeah. It mentions that that's only where the astrophage was. It wasn't.
Yeah.
The humans used it as insulation for their vessel.
Yeah. Because they knew about cosmic rays.
Yeah.
Talking about, Strat, right?
Yes.
She has been invested with all this authority by all these different countries. And to some extent, I'm like, I feel like you would get a coalition of nations who would do it.
Yes.
But not everybody. Mm-hmm. And so some of the members of this, I'm like, are we sure? Are we sure? They wouldn't just be selfish and say, nope, we're okay with the world going to hell. Or we don't believe it. I mean, that's the thing, right? Like if he wrote this today, he would have to deal with the people who didn't believe it, who thought it was a government conspiracy.
Yeah. I told you when you asked me to do this, I'm going to find a way to bring World War Z into this.
Okay.
And that was something that actually kind of reminded me of World War Z, is like the comparison of World War Z is very individualistic.
Yes.
And this is also not. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if it works out to just have one country do this all. Because they mention flying to Australia for their version of Redeker to,
right.
I think they call Riddell, who wants to pave over the Sahara Desert. They go to
Yeah.
Like, I saw the name Riddell, like, he's in a prison in Australia, like, this is just Redeker. This is just Redeker. Mm.
And then, yeah, like, they're on a Chinese aircraft carrier.
Right? Yes.
And so, like, they've got this international cooperation to make this thing happen, because, of course, if we don't fix it, everybody dies.
Yes.
And so it kind of reminds me of Sunshine a little bit in that sense, right? It's a, like, they had to, like, mine all the world's fissile materials for this, and there would be a lot of countries who would be like, no, we're not giving up our uranium.
Yeah.
But, If the sun is dying,
yeah,
there's a high priority here than your international penis measuring. So,
well, they mentioned like nuking Antarctica to try and like release methane.
Yeah,
they pave over a quarter of the Sahara Desert,
and that's to raise enough astrophage for the mission. Yeah, mm-hmm. Which has it gets to the point where they're like, well, what we need is more global warming.
Yeah,
and that's where the Antarctica thing comes in. And I like that, like, he takes the time to say there's a reason, you know, doing methane. Yeah, it's a stronger greenhouse gas, but it also will decay.
Yeah,
and it's funny because like not too far from where we live, there's a water treatment plant.
Yes,
and there's the flame that you see there, and there's a sign up there that says, "Don't call the police." Or don't call 911 if you see this flame. This is us burning off extra methane.
Yeah.
You're like, well, what are you burning extra methane for? And the reason they're doing it is that methane is a stronger greenhouse gas. And so the decision, I guess, was made, let's burn it. And, you know, carbon dioxide isn't as bad.
Yes.
But carbon dioxide stays there longer. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't thought of that until I read this book. So not that I'm arguing that methane should be released.
Yes.
I would think there'd be another way to bottle it or something.
Yeah. It's one of those like interesting responses to like climate deniers for that, like the fact that we have this global warming actually kind of helps us a little bit because it gives us some insulation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also that's not going to last.
Right.
Yeah. But kind of staying along that line, we start getting into when Ryland does interact with the astrophage by himself at the very beginning, chronologically of the book, it's just him trying to figure out what is this?
Can I kill it?
poked it with a stick. Mm-hmm. But it was a very scientific poke with a stick.
I did like that. Yeah. No, I didn't poke it. Yeah, okay. It was a very scientific stick.
But it's not until we get onto the aircraft carriage, they eventually gets nicknamed StratsVat, that they're starting to do these experiments on, can we generate power with this? How are we going to power a spaceship? Mm-hmm. This is kind of where you start doing the you'll have my axe.
Yes.
Phase of the book.
Yes.
It's like, oh, we're going to take this person's robotic surgery. We're going to take this other country's attempt at hibernating people. Hibernating people through like chemotherapy.
Right. Oh, any movie with this kind of premise, right? It's a disaster premise. Sunshine's the same kind of thing where I'm like, yeah. It's a B movie premise.
I don't think executed. I've actually seen Sunshine.
Ooh, you should borrow it, or you should just watch it after this. It's one of my favorite movies. Your dad doesn't really like it. The core. Have you ever seen The Core? There's the same kind of thing where like the Earth's core is starting to solidify. And so they need to send a mission to it to do explosions to start it rotating again because it's bad effects on the magnetic field if it slows down.
Thanks to Randall Monroe from XKCD, what happens if the Earth stops spinning?
Yeah. Well, just the core.
Okay.
Yeah. And so they do that where they go around and they're like Dermot Mulroney, Delroy Lindo. Has like this tech that just like vaporizes rock.
Oh.
And so they go to him and they're like, all right, how much? And he quotes them a price and they just write a check.
Yeah. Well, like it kind of goes to like the, I have the power to do anything.
Right.
Parks and Rec.
Mm, right.
Yes. Ron, you need a permit.
This just says I can do what I want.
Yes. I am the Parks Director. This is a park.
Yeah.
There's a kind of like a short, I feel like it's one of those scenes because every time when I read a book, I occasionally think like, I feel like the author's like preemptively trying to answer a question about something. Mm-hmm. Like of course there's gonna be a massive lawsuit about copyright and whatever.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Because essentially they archive all of human knowledge.
Yes. To throw on this vessel onto the ship called the Hail Mary.
Well, there's already like lawsuits for ChatGPT taking proprietary stuff from like the New York Times and other places.
Well, not just the Internet Archive.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And Strat, you know, she's aware of this. She's like, I'm probably going to spend the rest of my life in prison, but it's worth it if I save the world.
Yes.
And you'd think that there would be some clemency based on that.
Maybe.
Maybe not. I mean, Oppenheimer kind of goes into some of that, right? They'll never forgive you for this. We've probably come to the part where we want to talk about the major character reveal.
I feel like we should, yeah, so.
That explains the amnesia.
Yes.
Sort of. And I want to talk about this because, yeah.
That felt the most plot device-y thing to me.
The amnesia?
The selective amnesia. Like, so basically what happens is that they decide we're going to go send this crew up. Yeah. You talk about Dubois, one of the characters that they introduce as one of the scientists who's going to go on this. He has a romantic, and he's on the primary crew. Mm-hmm. He has a romantic interest with somebody on the secondary crew and they want to go do an experiment. They end up like completely obliterating themselves in an experiment because the acquisition department gave them a milligram.
Thousand times as many.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so instead of like a small flash, they got like this big explosion.
Yeah.
And it turns out that Ryland Grace also has the hibernation gene.
Right. And he was never told.
Which is just, that's the part that just drives me nuts.
Well, if they had told him, we would have known about it and we might have seen what was coming. Right.
No.
I don't know.
I mean, it's one of those like implied things. Like he's on here, therefore he must have it. Cause they mentioned it's like the only way to survive it. Cause they don't want like the people killing themselves on the voyage to there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or killing each other more likely.
Right.
So the primary and the secondary scientist person for this crew dies.
Yeah.
And it turns out that their third option all along was Ryland Grace. And Strat basically says, I'm going to pretend you have a choice. I'm going to put this on you either way. He goes, no, I don't want to go on this trip.
Yeah.
And they eventually come and say, we're just going to like lock you away until the launch happens. And then we're going to sedate you. And then we're just going to tell the other parts of the crew that you thought that you were going to be in their way during the launch. So you're just going to hibernate through it.
Yeah.
And then they like that part I get. Mm-hmm. The part that drives me nuts is they specifically mention the short-term amnesia as an effect of the drug. Mm-hmm. That's the part that just... That's one of the parts that irks me about it.
It didn't bother me too much. And I liked the way it was executed. This is where I pictured Christoph Waltz, where he's talking about Grace. You know, I believe that once you get there, you will fulfill the mission.
Yes, because you are inherently a good person.
I'm 97% sure that you'll, I can't remember what the numbers were, but then she says, but that 3% chance is still there. So we're going to sedate you with this thing that will cause short-term amnesia. So you won't remember that you were forced into this.
Yeah.
And so I didn't mind that. But I thought it was a nice, like, I could see Christoph Waltz delivering that perfectly.
Here's the thing, though. He talks about, like, I'm going to, like, when I wake up and I remember, I'll start sabotaging. And then she has, like, the no, you're inherently good person part of it.
Yeah.
And so that's one of those, well, that's just, then why tell him about, the, like, the short-term amnesia? Like, why mention that specifically?
Right.
It just felt just weird to me.
Well, she was villain monologuing, more yeah, or less, right? And because there's no consequence to it, right? I can tell you this and you're not going to remember it.
Yeah.
And you reminded me a little bit of... you've never read The Worthing Saga, Orson Scott Card?
I do not believe so.
One of the short stories in there, because it's not a book so much as a collection of related works.
Yeah, it's World War Z.
Is called Hot Sleep, okay. Where one of the premises in there is that people, in order to expand their lifespans, go voluntarily into hibernation. And so they sort of, as Orson Scott Card puts it, with Ender traveling a bunch at near light speed, that he skipped like a stone off the surface of time. And so, you know, lived far, far into the future by living for a few days per year, you know, and extend your life. But the process for going into the hibernation is incredibly painful, but you archive off your memory before you go into it. And so no one ever remembers how painful the process is. They experience it every time, but no one ever remembers it.
Huh.
And I've seen that kind of thing where I tore up my knee snowboarding one time. And yes, it is possible to tear up your knee snowboarding. Skiing, super easy to do it. Snowboarding, you have to have knees like mine. And while I was in the clinic, there was a lady there that had a dislocated shoulder.
Ugh.
And so they told her, okay, we're going to reduce this. And we're not going to give you anything for the pain. We're just going to give you something that suppresses memories, more or less. And there are drugs that do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to hear her scream in agony when they did this, and she'll never remember it. But I know that she went through it. And so it's a really weird thing with the way memory works, where, mm-hmm. where you're like, okay, I definitely experienced this, but since I don't remember it, did I really experience it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but no, also. So yeah, I understand why Andy Weir wanted to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't really buy that anybody would be as selfish as he was having Ryland be. As much of a coward.
Yeah.
Because if you're told that the world is dying, it doesn't matter what you're teaching 30 students per year until the end of the world.
Yeah.
And so I had a hard time buying it, but I'm willing to allow it because it gives him some place to go. Because then ultimately he and Rocky figure everything out. We skipped all over the evolution of the Talmiba to be able to survive in the nitrogen.
We'll talk about nitrogen later. So.
Yeah, I did want to talk about nitrogen.
So you want to talk about that now? We'll just come back to it.
Yeah. But you know, ultimately, like they are able to fix everything and go their separate ways. I'm going back to Earth. I'm going to make it back to Earth. It was supposed to be a one-way mission, but now I get to go back and
because Rocky has enough fuel
and tell Strat to go to hell.
Yes.
You know, when I get back, and now Rocky has enough. Yeah, Rocky gave me the fuel, right? So,
mm-hmm.
and then he realizes, oh, but. And I guess this is a good place to talk about it, where they have forced the evolution of Talmiba.
Yes.
Over, you know, successive generations. Yes. to be able to tolerate a certain amount of nitrogen, to be able to live in Three World, which is the world in Rocky's system, and yes. Venus.
Which is ours.
Which is ours. And as a side effect, and I like this, like the consequences
of what you're doing. It makes sense about the evolution never solves one problem at a time.
Right.
They also, so basically what happens is
it'll solve any problem you give it. You just didn't know you were giving it that other one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Basically what happens, they start evolving it to tolerate nitrogen and keeping it in these xenonite containers. And it turns out that in order to try and avoid the nitrogen, which is like instantly deadly to the Talmiba being which they collect on Adrian, planet Adrian, it learns to try and hide and work its way through the xenonite.
Right. Which Rocky's whole ship is made of.
Which Rocky's whole ship is made of. And also importantly, it's what the extra fuel cells on Grace's ship are made of as well.
Yeah, and particularly like the habitats that they had them in, that they were storing the Talmiba in to keep them alive long enough to get home.
Yeah.
And so he realizes, my friend's in trouble.
Yes.
And I still have the beetles that I can release that are pre-programmed to go back to Earth, but the Iridians have never needed developed computing technology like that because of their brain's capabilities.
Yeah.
It's almost like the Mentats in Dune, where they're amazing with mental arithmetic and that kind of stuff. They never made thinking computers of any kind.
Well, they mentioned kind of just as well as like side of things that they don't have, like, they have this thing called thrums, which is basically just a bunch of erudites coming together and just singing. And through that, they...
Yeah, it's supercomputed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a neural network.
Yeah.
No, very literal one. But he realizes Rocky's in trouble. And since I have the beetles, which we haven't talked about, that are little ships that are pre-programmed to go back to Earth with all the
information.
It's only like 5 terabytes of storage. I'm like, that's not that much storage. It was 2-3 years ago, but anymore, it's not that really that much. But it's enough to provide the information here's what we found. Here's how to execute it.
It's basically
send those back to Earth.
Yeah, it's basically a rocket-powered thumb drive.
Yeah, very much. That's a good point. I wonder if they have to flip it upside down twice to get it to go in right.
Three sides because it has the spin drive.
Right. And so he realizes, I don't see the torch from Rocky's ship anymore.
Yeah.
So he's definitely been affected. So he has to figure out basically dead reckoning, get back to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then goes back and helps him and realizes this means I can't go home again. And that's his arc, right? From I'm not going to sacrifice my life for my planet to I'm going to sacrifice my life and mm-hmm. my chance to go back home for my friend.
Yeah.
And it's a nice arc.
Mm-hmm. Part of that is the part that kind of, I think, was originally my biggest issue with the book. Mm. And I'm not sure now. So basically what happens is we have them figuring it out, them going their separate ways, Rylan being like, oh crap, this is actually even worse than it was. I fix. And he goes, oh, Rocky's bad. Yeah. And so then he goes, turns around, sends the Beatles out, goes. And from there we get to him meeting Rocky again to immediately cutting super spoiler to the epilogue, which is him living on Erudite. And
Eridon.
But like I think my biggest gripe initially was we don't see, and it's something I've had a chance to reflect on. Originally I didn't like it because we get nothing from him trying to solve it with Rocky.
Mm.
It like immediately cuts to them going back.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I feel like we're missing something there. Mm. And then kind of reflecting on it, like, we kind of know what's gonna happen.
Yeah. But you don't have to show us the work, but he does usually show the work.
So yes,
it sets up an expectation of that.
It's like the one time he doesn't do that.
Right.
And so that's the part that kind of just...
I realized I misspoke. It's Arid is the world.
Yes.
The world. Yeah.
Arid.
Yeah. And the Eridians that live there and Xenonite.
Yeah.
Erudite is fine. It sounds like erudite, right?
Yes.
Erudite, iridium. I mean, talking a little bit more about the adaptation, right? And there were a couple other things I wanted to talk about as well, but... In a potential adaptation of this, I actually wouldn't mind if Grace made it back home. The book leaves it open that, you know, one of these days I might decide, you know, they said that they can provide me with a ship to get home.
Yeah.
And that would be cool. But he's at peace, right? Because he's teaching again.
Yeah, he teaches on this, like, keyboard
mm-hmm.
for yeah. these.
I picture him in, like, the Phantom of the Opera with a big pipe organ.
Oh, that's what I thought, too. Every teacher has their shtick.
Yep, big time.
But yeah, so yeah. I think... This past year, they announced that, I believe it's Lord and Miller,
mm-hmm.
are adapting Project Henry into a movie with Ryan Gosling set to star as Rylan Grace.
Yeah.
And that is all the information we have, I believe, so far.
Yeah. I feel like Rylan Grace is not described as being as attractive as Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
But adaptational attractiveness is the yes. thing.
Just what are your thoughts on how to adapt this kind of story?
I mean, I think I would, we talked about it earlier, right? I think I would keep a lot of the flashback portions, but you'd have to cut out a lot of them.
Yeah.
And you'd really, I think, to me, you'd only want to have the character ones, because you don't want to have a bunch of exposition either. And that's the function of the flashbacks, is to provide exposition for how did I get here? What's Astrophage? You know,
yes.
What are we doing? You know, how exactly are we expected to fulfill this mission? And you could have it so that instead of flashbacks, there are played out, video, you know, like vlog kind of things for the mission crew. We couldn't tell you about this, you know, now that you're coming out of your
hibernation.
Yeah.
Carbonite.
You might not. Yes, exactly. You might not remember this. And yeah. It reminds me of the book Cytene. Actually, there's a character that is cloned from another one, and she's growing up. And as she's growing up, she gets tapes of the person telling her, you know, things. Yeah. And this is one of the actual issues that I had with the drug. It said that it would cause short-term amnesia, but like technical skills and that kind of stuff, like you'd still be able to ride a bike and that kind of stuff. He's known his name a long time. So was that just a consequence of the coma in general? I think it had to have been.
Yeah, this is
because I'm not totally sure that it works.
Yeah, this is kind of where they start mentioning about just the weirdness of like the drug and the hibernation. It's just kind of bizarre, it feels like. Because I first thought, when they mentioned hibernation, my first thought was Interstellar. It's like, oh, we just put these people to sleep and just let them go.
Right.
But then you start adding the...
Surprise, Matt Damon.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That's who Rocky should be played by. Just Matt Damon in a mocap suit.
Could be.
Yeah. But like, I understand the flashbacks, but I feel like when you start doing it that way, then you start cutting out what you get from the story.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, I'm not sure how to condense the parts into a movie.
Yeah.
Which kind of starts getting into my new personal thought that
everything should go to prestige series.
Yeah. Everything should go to prestige series.
Yeah. 10 episode series, 8 episodes, if you think you can do it. You yeah. know. I mean, for adapting a full length novel, that's honestly the way to go. If your goal is to be as close to the source as possible.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you change things around for this, but you know, The Martian was a good movie and it was a longer book.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the same. I think it's 400-ish pages.
I think so.
One thing that I would ask Andy Weir if he were here is, do you favor panspermia as a theory for the development of life on planets? Because it certainly in this book he does.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that he personally does. It's just like, hey, well, what if panspermia was a thing and we'd have astrophage that has DNA? You're like, well, that's surprising.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. So I don't know, you know, to make a movie out of this. You would have to you'd have to lose a lot of the secondary and tertiary characters.
Yeah.
I think. You know, the book doesn't even, like, Grace mourns that his friends are dead, you know, but you don't really feel it because you don't meet them until later.
Well, he mentioned that. It's like, I don't know these people, but I feel like I should, and so that's why I'm crying.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think helps.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the way the flashbacks, I don't like, with the book, the way the flashbacks are set up seems really convenient, which is, yeah. I interact with the object, therefore flashback.
Yeah.
But I think doing that every time for the movie mm-hmm. just breaks it up. I kind of do like your idea of having like a short intro to Hail Mary, kind of like a, what's the thing I'm thinking of? Like one of those like pre-flight videos.
Oh,
so like we get that one.
The in-flight safety video on
exactly.
Delta.
Yeah. Just do that. Like, this is what a thin drive is. Here's how it works.
In the unlikely event of a water landing. I don't know. I'll be curious to see. And of course, coverage will continue on this topic if the movie comes out.
So I just pencil that in?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're out of college and you still live in the area, so you're on the guest list.
All right.
So, I mean, when we got a recorder with 4 mic inputs,
yeah,
you know, we knew we could always have an in-person guest. Mm-hmm. So I guess we never talked about at the beginning of the podcast if we liked the book. But
oh, yes. I quite like this book.
I do too. Yeah. I was honestly a little worried because when I reread The Martian for Take Me to Your Reader, mm-hmm. I didn't like it as much. It seemed like there was too much homework where like you're showing all the work and like, okay, come on, move on. Here he does. I feel like it's a more skilled hand in this book to not show all the work, to yada yada some of it and just say, I'm a science teacher. I know that, you know, and not show me the proof the whole way through.
Yeah.
And so there is still not necessarily math done, but he talks about doing the math to calculate a trajectory or you know, various things.
I love the Excel spreadsheets. So I just put them in a spreadsheet and just control enter and then go.
Yeah. Yeah. They are pretty handy.
Yes.
So comps for the book. I said we were going to talk about this a little bit. And we've kind of mentioned them as we've gone along. I talked about Sunshine and The Core. I'm reading right now Spaceman of Bohemia. And it has, you know, I don't think he's a teacher, but he's, you know, a scientist who ends up on a mission where there ends up a multi-legged alien on it. And that movie is coming out soon. Just called Spaceman.
Is it an alien?
That is the question. Yeah.
When I saw the trailer for that, my first thought was like, oh, is this the first trailer for Hail Mary?
Right.
And then I saw Adam Sandler in a beard and I'm like, oh, it's going to be a good movie then.
Right, right. Serious Adam Sandler with a beard. Yes. Those tend to be good movies. Yeah. I don't know. I think we're about done here.
Yeah.
I think we both recommend the book.
Absolutely.
I was at the top of my ballot that year. The book that won is fine, but I liked this one better.
Yes.
So, which is why I wanted to open out to do the nominees, because I know there are a lot of people who are like, that book was the wrong one to win that year.
Yeah.
And so I want to let people come on and talk about those. So thank you for joining me.
Absolutely.
I told you, it was about a week ago, Like at the Super Bowl, when we were watching the Super Bowl, I'm like, hey, any chance that you could quickly read that book and be ready next weekend? my scheduling hit a little bit of a bump. So I appreciate you stepping in to do it.
Absolutely.
So it was a quicker way to get you in here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you, Peter.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll talk again on some podcast sometime.
Absolutely.
All right. And, you know, everybody, let us know what you think of Project Hail Mary. Did you like it what did you think of it in the year in which it was nominated? Because it was shortlisted.
Yeah.
And what do you think about the adaptation? Who would you like to cast for Ryland Grace? Yeah, I think that's about it. Well, everybody, I hope you enjoyed that discussion with Peter. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's fun covering some of the nominees, you know, books that people thought should have won in certain years. And so if you're somebody like that and you want to reach out to me and pick something off that list or on the list at all, you can do that. Look in the show notes. I have a link there to the Mondo list of award winners. I mentioned it in the podcast. I will continue to need guests going forward. So do reach out to me, feedback@hugospodcast.com, or find me on one of the social media sites, usually at Hugo's Podcast or Seth Heasley. I do want to remind people that the Hugo nomination period is now open. So if you feel that this podcast warrants a nomination, then please feel free to add me to your list. I'd really appreciate that. Who knows what happened with the nominations last year? I haven't gotten into that on my podcast, but it's been very well covered in other places. So, you know, it was an honor to be shortlisted, but I would love to be shortlisted again. I am planning to attend Worldcon this year in person. We actually have booked our travel, and so we will be there for basically the entire time. I probably won't be at the con every day, but I will be in Glasgow. So if you are going to be in the area and you want to meet up, let me know and we can start trying to plan that. As always, if you want to support this podcast, you can share episodes with your friends, share them on social media, leave reviews for the podcast wherever you listen to the podcast. I'd appreciate that. You can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/SethHeaselD. And you can also sign up to support the podcast on Patreon at patreon.com/HugosPodcast. In terms of scheduling for the podcast, I guess I should mention this kind of thing every now and then. The next episode is going to be another genre, subgenre deep dive kind of thing with my little sister Katie. I recorded it some time ago. I'll get it edited eventually and drop it into the feed. And then I'll be back on my normal 4-episode cycle, where 2 of them are going to be regular book episodes. One that's a book that I wanted to talk about that isn't necessarily on the winner's list. Another that is on the winner's list, or on the nominee's list at least. And then 2 other genre and author deep dives. So if you want to volunteer for one of those kind of episodes, also reach out to me, because I need to get those scheduled as well. I have a lot of potential guests. I just haven't actually gotten to scheduling a lot of them. Okay, and I think that's about enough business for this time. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye. The theme music for the Hugo's There podcast was composed and performed by Tim Cuskey.